Hello and welcome to the third episode of the Inside the Blue Jays podcast. I'm Ethan Diamandis. I'm here with my co-host Mitch Bannon, and we're the Blue Jays beat writing duo at SI.com. What a relief it is to say that after 99 days of MLB's lockout, baseball is finally back. There's a free agent frenzy happening, players are rolling up to camp, and there's even been a few big trades in the last few days. All that good stuff is happening as we speak. On today's episode, Mitch and I break down Toronto's schedule for the next few weeks. We'll address the exciting signing of Japanese lefty Yusei Kikuchi, and take a look at some other potential moves for the Blue Jays. We'll finish it all off with a short chat on some new rule changes put into place with this new collective bargaining agreement. For breaking news, unique analysis pieces, and much more Blue Jays content, follow our written work at InsideTheBlueJays.com. For now, though, sit back, relax, and enjoy the third episode of the Inside the Blue Jays podcast. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, Ethan, baseball is back. 99 days of a lockout. We got transactions back. We got players reporting to camp. Tom Brady is trying to steal the spotlight coming back to football, but we're in baseball mode now. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling thrilled about all of those things.
Even Tom Brady?
Well, you know what? I'm a Lions fan, so there's really not much skin in the game at this point in the season. It's usually at the end of the year when the Lions are, we're figuring if we're drafting first or fifth on a good season overall. But yeah, Mitch, I'm so excited. My goodness. And we're getting a full 162. It turns out those artificial deadlines were artificial. But yeah, I'm about as happy as can be. And Toronto has quite the team, and we're, you know, swinging into year two as beat writers at the right time. So I'm ready to get to it.
Yeah, I think we bought all of our Blue Jays stock at the right time. They look like they're going to be a fun team this year. I am really glad that we're getting a full 162 game season. It's just, I tweeted out after one of those first deadlines and it kind of blew up that Vlad and Bo were going to go into their fourth seasons and still not play a full 162. So it's good for Toronto Blue Jays fans and for us to finally get a full season with this team. We are recording this on Sunday night, but they will begin playing spring training in 5 days. Friday the 18th, they're going to play their first game. Sunday the 20th, they're going to open up the home slate of their spring training games. It sounds like Shai Davidi just put out a piece that Jose Berríos might pitch that first game on Friday. Still kind of unsure. Pitchers are coming in at different points. They've been working out on their own the whole offseason. So it is going to be kind of a storyline to watch on how kind of built up guys are, if anyone's got nagging injuries. But what are you kind of looking for in these first couple of days of guys reporting to camp?
I don't know. Apart from the lovely little videos of everyone reuniting, I think it's like you said, how there's been a lot of live batting practice. I don't know if you've seen those videos. And yeah, I think it's going to be how built up the starters are. I know in that piece that Shai noted, guys, I think we're only around 60 to 75 pitches probably by the time the season starts. That's significantly lower than what you'd expect. But, you know, given a 3 week spring, it's, I guess, not that outrageous. It's going to be arms. And you see now with the Kikuchi signing, Toronto's building up that depth. And, you know, they still have two notable, you know, swing guys who could very well be fifth starters in Nate Pearson and Ross Stripling on different teams. Right. I think that depth is going to be big. And you see another signing, someone like Joe Biagini, like Toronto is properly building up its depth. And we'll be there and we'll be watching the arms to see how they're doing.
Yeah, there's so many leads. We're not going to bury the Kikuchi lead much further. Baseball's back. That's the main headline. But yeah, the Jays have made another big move. They signed Yusei Kikuchi, a Japanese left-handed starter who played for the Seattle Mariners for the last 3 years, to another three-year deal. He will net $36 million. It is a front-loaded deal, so take that for what you will, for what it means for the Blue Jays' payroll this year. Does that mean they're maxing out or nearly maxing out their payroll with that signing and front-loading it to get contract extensions, or maybe their payroll is going to be really high this year and they feel like they have some room to work with, so that's why they front-load it. But yeah, he will be a Blue Jay, it sounds like. Per Shai, he's going to report on Monday, do his physical, and start throwing again. I would assume he's been throwing during his offseason like everyone else. It'll be interesting to see. He's a guy who they couldn't even make a plan with before the lockout. A lot of the guys, they're like, okay, here's what we want you to do when we're not talking to you for the next 3 months. He's a guy who's a free agent, so they don't really know what his offseason plan has been like. So those first couple of days will be very telling. But I know you've kind of looked into Kikuchi. What's your take on the signing?
Yeah, I think it's a smart signing by Toronto. Say what you will about, you know, maybe the price or front loading it, which, like you said, is probably a thought on maybe spending for, you know, a couple of years down the road, and with, you know, Vlad Guerrero and Bo Bichette needing so significant extensions. But I think the bottom line with Kikuchi is when he came over from Japan, the bar was pretty high for him, and the results have been kind of underwhelming, right? Like I don't have his career ERA down, but I know it's pretty close to
4.97. I think that's off the top of my head though.
He's got good stuff, but he gets hit really, really hard. And that's the bottom line. So for a left-handed starter, he's got quite a quick fastball, and his Statcast comparable based on velocity and movement is Robbie Ray. You know, I get the feeling that Kikuchi is also a lot like a different former Blue Jay in Steven Matz, who's also left-handed and who Toronto also picked up coming off a really tough season. And they were able to, you know, work him into something maybe greater than expected, right? Matz's battle kind of in 2021, and we talked to him quite a bit about that, was he struggled to find middle ground, right? You know, he'd have these really solid outings, and then he'd follow that up with like a real clunker. And I think that's kind of the same problem for Kikuchi, in the sense that, you know, he had a really great first half where his stuff was going well and he was kind of stifling those hard contact issues. And then it came to the second half of the season and, you know, his ERA ballooned. He was an all-star, but he certainly wasn't pitching like an all-star at the second half of the season. Matz told us, you know, quite frequently that he was a feel guy. He's someone that, you know, relied on how the ball was coming out of his hand. It wasn't so much analytics. It was more a traditional, just, you know, pick up the ball and go. We haven't spoken to UC yet, but I imagine that he's probably similar in that sense a little bit, which I think is good for Toronto because they have a pretty renowned pitching coach in Pete Walker. Who might be able to work with a guy who has a similar skill set to Steven Matz, and that's the new signing, Kikuchi.
Yeah, I think it's easy to look at Ray and Matz and be like, this is another hard-throwing left-hander, but it's hard to not do that because they're clearly trust their pitching coaches, and especially Pete Walker. Everyone loves to every single time they sign a guy with an inflated ERA, it's Pete Walker gets to work with this guy. But I don't think it's unfair to look at this signing as a guy who is moldable by this pitching development program. And because he's a really hard throwing lefty, and if you can get a really hard throwing lefty and tweak a few things, he can be one of the most valuable assets in baseball. And I covered one Kikuchi start last year, and it was the Canada Day start at Buffalo against the Blue Jays. And he absolutely dominated Toronto. It was one of the most dominant opposing pitcher starts against the Blue Jays I covered all last year. I think it was 7 innings, gave up 1 run. He struck out a bunch of guys. And so that was kind of my impression of Kikuchi. And then I looked at the numbers at the end of the year when we were starting looking at potential free agent fits for the Blue Jays. I'm like, where did this 5 ERA come from? This guy was an ace. I remember him being an all-star. He dominated the Jays. So it will be kind of interesting to see what he has to say went wrong in that second half. And I'm sure he'll admit that it wasn't as good as the first half, because it just clearly wasn't. So it's about figuring out how to get back. It's not like Matz, where this guy had a 10 ERA in 2020 and you have to fix him, or Ray, where he is walking a bunch of guys and you have to figure out how to fix this. The talent is very clearly there for Kikuchi. He has a 15 start sample last year in the first half, very recently ago, of him being a very, very good starter. So you just got to refine that form, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's got a strong fastball, and he also throws, like we talked about a little bit before the podcast, he throws a splitter too, and that's a pitch that, you know, he doesn't throw very often, but it's a pitch that can be, you know, really deadly, and his arsenal is super unique. So it would be quite nice to see him get back to that first half form. And yeah, you're right, he's not exactly a total, you know, tear it down and rebuild him type project, because he's shown that he can be a quality pitcher, much better than a fifth starter for sure, which is what he may very well end up being in Toronto this year. But he's done it over a great sample size. So I'm definitely excited to see him pitch this year.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point of where he only really has to be the fifth starter for this team, which is crazy. He was arguably the best starter on a Seattle Mariners team that finished one game worse than the Blue Jays last year. And then he comes over and is arguably the fifth best starter on this team. So the ceiling just has to be pretty high. And any upside you get is going to be, okay, we add another top three starter to this rotation full of potential top three starters. But it doesn't sound like the Blue Jays are done. We kind of knew they were going to add a pitcher of some kind, a starting pitcher, to deepen that rotation, and they did it. I think they're probably out of the starting pitching market now, but they have some very clear holes on the infield, maybe another bullpen guy. Left-handed outfielders are kind of being floated around. Is there a free agent or trade guy who's really sticking out to you right now?
Not necessarily someone that would be sticking out in terms of, you know, scope or clout or name value, but someone that Toronto is, you know, reportedly having active negotiation with is a familiar face, and perhaps not such a fondly remembered familiar face in Toronto, but that's veteran infielder Jonathan Villar. According to Hector Gomez, who's a pretty reputable reporter in the Dominican Republic, he says Toronto and Villar have been in talks on a one-year deal worth about $6.5 million plus incentives. And I'm seeing a lot of mixed reactions, especially on Twitter, about what, you know, this signing could bring for Toronto. When I think of VR, I think he checks all the boxes, right? He's a switch hitter. He plays multiple infield positions. He adds a really intriguing kind of speed power combo that I don't think too many other guys on Toronto's roster have. You know, in theory, he could be this perfect utility guy for Toronto, but I think it depends on the guy who shows up, right? Like when we think of VR, we think of 2020. It was kind of a big deadline addition that was getting people excited for that shortened season in Toronto, obviously making the playoffs a little bit in an abbreviated fashion. You know, we weren't expecting Toronto to make the playoffs in 2020 with the roster they had. And he was basically, you know, just not useful at all, to put it frankly. He had a 481 OPS. But he bounced back in 2021 with the Mets. He ended up slugging 416. His OPS plus was above 100. He had 14 stolen bases too. So, you know, there, if that's the guy that shows up, 1 year, $6.5 million isn't looking that bad. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I think he's an interesting guy because all of the attention in the infield all offseason, because the free agent pool hasn't been that deep in the infield, has been on these trade candidates like Matt Chapman and Jose Ramirez. And so when a name like VR comes out, it sounds a little underwhelming. But I think if it kind of comes with another ad, like a Kyle Schwarber or like a bat, someone who can bring the offense, and then VR kind of deepens the infield. You rotate Espinal, VR, Biggio around in different fashions, because VR can play shortstop too, and they're going to need a backup shortstop. Espinal is probably that right now, but Bo is not going to be able to play 162 games in the field. So I think it would be a valuable addition on the bench and to play 450, maybe 500 plate appearances. But I do understand why people would be underwhelmed if that is the infield ad. I just think it, at that price point, it could very easily be accompanied with a trade or with another big signing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the question I wanted to lob back to you was, you know, is Toronto's interest in him maybe telling about their overall strategy towards infielders, either in the fact that they're maybe going more for the trade market and that this is going to be, you know, their free agent signing in terms of infield, or are they going to supplement it with an even bigger infielder signing or someone like Chris Bryant, or, you know, you talked about Kyle Schwarber. I just want to know maybe what you think about the interest in VR and what that says overall about Toronto's offseason strategy.
Yeah, I think it's telling on how difficult the free agent infield market is to navigate for a team that wants to add an impact bat. Like Corey Seager, Marcus Semien off the market. Carlos Correa probably not going to be a Blue Jay, maybe, but I don't think that's going to happen. Chris Bryant, I'm starting to be a little more pessimistic that there's legitimate interest there or a price point that would match up. But yeah, after those top guys, VR is kind of the next best thing. They had interest in Josh Harrison, so it's kind of the same tier of guy. And so I think it kind of just shows that if they can't make a trade work, they're still going to go try to get one of the best infielders they can. just how good that infielder is maybe a little worse than people would have liked. But if they still swing a deal for Jose Ramirez or Matt Chapman, I think people are going to be very happy with those deals. So do you think anyone else in the trade market you're looking at, or do you think those are feasible options?
Well, everyone wants Ramirez, right? That's he's the dream. And I think the Guardians recognize that he is a great fit on, you know, 29 other teams. He's super talented, right? But my mind kind of goes now a little bit more to Matt Chapman. So at the start of the offseason, I would have thought more about Jose, but seeing how Oakland is kind of selling off their best players, like we kind of knew they would, but now they're really clean in house and they're doing it quickly. Yeah, I just think Chapman is a better fit and he's more likely to go. Ramirez has that cheap team option. The Guardians are pretty keen on cutting payroll from what we understand. So I think if I'm the Toronto front office and I'm looking to make that big splash, I mean, it worked in 2015 when Toronto swung a deal for an Oakland third baseman. It would be pretty awesome, I think, for the fan base and for the makeup for the roster if they did something like that again.
Yeah, I think it's the only thing is that's a rare trade win with the Oakland Athletics. I'd be fearful of who the guys they ask for, but I do agree. I'm not that worried about bringing a left-handed bat in if you're bringing in someone of the caliber of Matt Chapman. A, because his defense is his most valuable trait, and I just think putting a guy like that beside Bo Bichette will elevate the defense of the left side of the infield so much. I think Bo is kind of a growing defensive shortstop. The team's super comfortable with him playing there, but he's not Andrelton Simmons. So putting an elite platinum glove third baseman there will just take a huge weight off his shoulders, I think, and let him take a few steps left towards second base on a lot of ground balls. But yeah, I think Jose Ramirez is a bit of a pipe dream. It's a pipe dream, rightfully so, because the fit makes so much sense. But I think Shai wrote the cost is prohibitively high, which does not sound great for the chances of him being traded. Is there kind of So if we've gone over the second and third base options, but it sounds like they're still in the market for some other stuff. I know left-handed hitting outfielder, a reliever. What do you think is kind of more likely addressed or more likely where the big resources would go between those two and any names that stick out?
Yeah, I'd turn probably back to the free agent market and look at a plethora of, you know, not like all-star caliber left-handed hitting outfielders, but some really solid guys who might play, you know, 110 games in some kind of platoon role. And it starts with a guy like Jock Peterson. I think of him and I think of a guy who's got a lot of good pop. He's got a pretty strong attitude. He seems like quite a bit of fun. He's not a great OBP guy. He's not a terribly great defender, but I could see Toronto picking up someone like him, you know, on a 1 year deal, you know, 1 year, 7 million, 1 year, 8 million, something like that to fill that platoon or that fourth outfielder that they need. Another guy is Michael Conforto. Now this would maybe be a bit more of it would require some more financial gymnastics, I suppose, given that he is attached to a qualifying offer still. But he's probably the best hitter out of between him, or compared to Peterson rather. But he's also struggles heavily against left-handed pitching, and given the way the market's shaking out for guys like him, I don't know if it's worth spending, you know, $15, $16, $17 million on a guy who may sit against lefties. I don't know what your take is on that, but Conforto's a guy I could see Toronto making a move on, but I don't know how I'd feel about it if he ended up in a Jays jersey.
Yeah, I think I would, if they're getting to the $15+ million multi-year deal range, which is probably what it would cost to get Scott Boras client Michael Conforto, which I feel like is a relevant caveat. I would rather spend that on Kyle Schwarber. I, sitting in the GM seat for a brief moment here, I wrote a piece about kind of the fit for Schwarber on the Jays a couple of days ago. And it's obviously not an obvious defensive fit in that he's not a second or third baseman, or he's not a left-handed reliever. But I think he kind of brings that left-handed pop and the left-handed OBP that this team really needs. He's kind of brings what Kevin Biggio could bring on a really good year. With 35 home runs, he could be your backup first baseman and give Vladdy some DH days. He could DH himself. He's had a very up and down defensive career with some interesting play in the corner outfield spots, but I'd be comfortable putting him there for 30, maybe 40 games in left field if someone gets hurt or if Lourdes wants to DH for a little bit. So I think that's a great fit in terms of the bat. I think it brings a top five hitter from the left side who brings a very different look from all the other guys you have up there. He's kind of a similar look to Conforto with maybe a little bit better split, but worse defense. So I would probably rather go that direction. Another name that strikes out or sticks out to me is Corey Dickerson. If they want to go down the low cost, high upside, reliable left-handed hitting corner outfield, I wouldn't be shocked if they brought him back on a 1-year small AAV deal. He might want to go somewhere else because he just didn't get that much playing time, except for when other people were injured with the Jays, but who knows? Another name they've been kind of connected to, or people would see if they want to spend on the reliever market, Kenley Jansen. I think Shai linked the Jays, said they were going up to that tier of the market. So that is kind of very telling to how much they're willing to address this bullpen. But then it kind of becomes a juggling show with, okay, who's getting the saves here? Jordan Romano, Kenley Jansen. I don't think you can do the Charlie Montoyo, we don't have a closer special when you have Kenley Jansen and Jordan Romano on your team. You kind of got to give guys roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough to look at Jansen and tell him, hey, you know, you're setting up Jordan Romano. But, you know, it's interesting that they've worked their way up to Jansen in terms of negotiations or maybe just kicking the tires. Because you would think, I mean, of course, they're touching on all realms of free agency, but you would think that they'd be prioritizing infield because, you know, beyond Toronto's current roster, like Santiago Espinal is like slated in as the starting third baseman. And then beyond that, there's like Kevin Smith and there's Otto Lopez, but there's really not many guys, especially if someone goes down on that side of the infield. It's going to be big trouble. I like Schwarber is just such a good fit in terms of how well he hits. He's honestly one of the better hitters in the American League if you look at the stats. And I think you could stomach 30 games in left field with him. I mean, you and I watched Corey Dickerson make some tosses from left field, and it was, you know, it was apparent that maybe he was injured or his defense wasn't quite what it used to be.
And they were playing him at center field for a few games too.
Yeah. I think Schwarber could be a great fit, of course, but it comes down again to how much Toronto wants to prioritize defense. And I think when we spoke to Mark Shapiro at the deadline, you know, he talked about the bullpen obviously immediately, cause that's what was the big issue at the time. And he also talked about prioritizing strong defense. And I think that's like, you know, the counter opposite bringing in someone like Schwarber. But at the end of the day, Toronto's had plenty of success in past years by just rolling out the best hitters in the American League and completely bludgeoning teams to death. And with the strong rotation that Toronto now has on the other side, why not make the offense just as equally as dangerous? So I could see a bat first guy signing too, but Toronto does need left-handed bats and there are a few options. Hopefully, you know, they'll snag one of them.
Yeah. I have a working theory that this is maybe connecting dots that aren't there, but signing Yusei Kikuchi means more playing time for Santiago Espinal. I think no matter who they bring in the infield, unless it's a Matt Chapman trade, Espinal's going to be getting starts when Ryu and Kikuchi are on the mound. Two left-handed starters were pretty high ground ball guys. I think you're going to be putting Espinal out there over almost any other defensive options, unless it is Matt Chapman. I think it just makes a lot of sense. They did that a lot last year when Ryu was starting. Espinal was the guy at third. So I think it's a good sign for Santiago Espinal that they've brought in two of these ground ball lefty guys.
Yeah. And Toronto loves Espinal. You talk to Charlie, he always has something nice to say about Santiago. And I mean, how can you not? Like he's so smooth in the infield. And even at second base, like I think there's a good chance he gets a lot of reps at second base. Of course, depending on whether they sign a marquee second baseman, third baseman, however that plays out. Him and Bo are good buddies from what I understand. And, you know, having a middle infield combo like that's pretty sweet, I would say.
Yeah, I think the kind of no matter who they bring in, I don't think they're going to make two infield adds. So we're going to see playing time for Kevin Biggio and Santiago Espinal, regardless of what happens, barring an injury. And they just make such a natural offensive platoon. It would be hard to platoon them at third base just because I think the Jays admitted they forced too much on Kevin trying to make him an everyday third baseman last year. They're going to really try to hone in on corner outfield, utility roles. If he's starting, it's probably at second base. So the defensive platoon's not really there, but I love the way those two bats play off of each other in terms of like a righty and a lefty. They do very different things. They have very different approaches. Espinal hits velocity really well. Kevin struggles against high fastballs. So I think it's, you can really play the matchups well there.
Mm-hmm. And Biggio is someone that will obviously benefit from a full season, a full healthy season. He'll also benefit in the sense, not just this year, well, not this year at all, rather, but in 2023, when there's some rule changes that knock out the shift. Kevin was shifted, according to Fangraphs, in a higher percentage than any other Blue Jay. And I think that kind of affected him because you noticed, in my research for a story that I wrote for our website, I had gone back and looked at Kevin when he came up in his rookie year, and, you know, 18 and 19, I believe, were his two best seasons. And his spray charts were all pull. He would just, you know, sit on that inside pitch and rip it. And if it was an off speed, he'd turn and rip it too. I think though, once teams started to figure that out, they shifted him obviously significantly. And then it was reflective in the stats afterwards in 2020. In 2021, that he actively tried to go more up the middle. You see his spray charts kind of narrow towards the middle a little bit more. And I think that either messed with his head a little bit. It definitely got rid of some of his extra base pop in 2021, but we know he wasn't entirely healthy. So that's down the road. But I think this will be a big year for Kevin in that he's got the opportunity. Again, it's given to him. If he can just step up and take it and solidify himself, show that 18 and 19 weren't, you know, the one-offs, and that's the player he can be. I think even him and Espinal, a healthy Kevin Biggio, a productive Kevin Biggio, can be still a quality duo there at third base or second base, whatever the infield combo is.
Yeah, I agree. I think he is the only current left-handed bat who's expected to get any significant playing time on the team, which is pretty crazy right now, and which I think leads me to believe, as weird as it is to prioritize handedness, that they're probably going to bring in someone else. But that was a great segue into rule change talk by you. And there was a bunch of different rule changes in the most recent CBA. The obvious ones that don't really impact the Jays that much: universal DH. Sounds like Nelson Cruz might be leaning towards going an NL West team right now. You mentioned the no shifting next year. There's big changes for the schedule as well coming next year, which I think is a big one for the Jays. We can circle back on that. It sounds like there's no more 10-day IL for pitchers. It sounds like it's going to be back to the 15-day IL. Could impact the Jays a little bit. They liked using their pitcher 10-day ILs to kind of, starters would only miss one start. You can't do that anymore. Guys got to kind of be legitimately hurt to go on the IL now. And then there could be expanded rosters to begin the season with kind of the shortened spring training and with kind of the shotgun spring training and the workload uncertainty around starting pitchers. But we can go back to the schedule stuff because I think that kind of impacts the Jays the most. So starting next year, it's going to be a balanced schedule. They're going to play every team in the league. You're still going to have this rivalry series against an NL team. Not still 100% certain how it's going to work, but so less games against AL East teams, and then they're going to play everyone. How do you think this kind of long-term impacts the Jays?
Well, short-term, it's one season too late, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's long been apparent that Toronto's in the most difficult division in, you know, I would say in baseball, certainly the American League, not having to play the Red Sox and the Yankees, you know, in those bam boxes of stadiums is going to be big, especially for a team, Toronto, that's now loaded up on starting pitching. It's almost good timing in that, you know, they'll play more NL teams at those big parks. And it's something that people in the baseball community have been talking about for a long time. So I'm interested to see how that plays out, because from what I understand, it's still a little bit up in the air in terms of the, you know, the minutia of the new schedule. But off the top, great news for Toronto.
Yeah, I think the combination of the expanded 12-team postseason and this schedule shift like largely neutralizes the American League East. And that's kind of something we've been talking about for the Jays for a long time. I think that was 3 weeks of Twitter discourse after the Jays missed the playoffs by a game was how much they got robbed by not being able to play in Toronto and by the difficulties of the AL East. And those aren't going to be really there as much anymore. Obviously, they're still going to have to play the Red Sox and Yankees more than anyone else. And the Rays, too, we can toss them in. But and hey, maybe in 5 years, the Orioles will be a powerhouse. And there'll be an issue that this new schedule will prevent the Jays from having to tackle. But I do think it is very interesting that though the CBT went up, the Red Sox and Yankees are going to be able to spend more, which could seem like a bad thing for the Jays, who aren't probably going to be a CBT team anytime soon. These other expanded postseasons and changed schedules really help the Jays in not having to compare themselves against those teams and look at the broader American League overall.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you mentioned, well, the obvious disadvantages with Toronto playing the entire 2020 season in Buffalo and then starting 2021 in Dunedin. That seems like so long ago, my goodness. And then moving to Buffalo. And now, you know, there's a good chance that some players from the Red Sox who are under the vaccine threshold, the Yankees, Aaron Boone said today that, you know, there's still a few guys that need, well, that aren't vaccinated. Who knows if they will be vaccinated. And that's because of Canada's federal border law requiring, you know, international travelers to be vaccinated to come into the country. That was made apparent, I think, in Canada in January. They said there will be no more exemption for professional athletes. So, I mean, maybe this is the universe giving a bit of a boost to the Blue Jays, but that's just, you know, another thing that I guess could be pretty easily avoided. But if it does come into play, I'm sure Toronto will take every advantage they can get.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how that was kind of leaked as, this is a weird caveat that got agreed to in the CBA, that like the Players Association isn't really going to even try to fight this. It sounds like the fight has gone into the hands of the Yankees and Red Sox, because we've already seen the players and managers talk about this and complain a little bit about it. And I do understand if you're a Yankees and Red Sox fan, how it's like frustrating to be like, oh, the Jays are like getting an advantage, but also your players can just get vaccinated. But I do think that this is not going to be anything that goes away anytime soon. I think the second we have a series of one of these teams in Toronto and a really good player is mysteriously not making the trip up north, there's going to be comments about it. And I think there's going to be a lot of Major League Baseball pressure, and we'll see how long it lasts, especially if kind of COVID gets under wraps over the season. Is there any other kind of, go for it.
Sorry. Well, it's definitely not inconsequential, right? Like, this is not something that is, you know, maybe they figure their crap out, you know, halfway through the season, but it's still going to be something that's of consequence. And I'm pretty sure I cut you off there before you're going to go into our next segue, which will be just looking ahead to spring training, right? You know, next time we record a podcast, all our listeners will be happy to know that Mitch and I are tanning out in Florida, taking it all in, sipping drinks with cute little umbrellas in them. And of course, watching and covering baseball extensively. What are some things that you're really looking forward to checking out? What are some big storylines that you think are worth following closely?
Yeah, I think we are indeed taking our talents to South Beach, or maybe a little north of South Beach, but I'm pretty pumped to get down to spring training. And I got some like really weird nitty gritty, like spring training story ideas I've been kind of cooking. Every single time they got close to a CBA, I jotted down a few more spring training deals and be like, this is it, we're going to get down there. And then it would fall apart. But this is a name maybe some people are familiar with, Bowden Francis. I'm not 100% on the first name pronunciation. Seems like a really interesting pitcher who's not getting a whole lot of talk. I feel like if this guy was on the Blue Jays 2 years ago, he would have been a rotation candidate. We would have been like, oh, is this a Thomas Hatch-esque guy who came over in a small nondescript trade? He was acquired alongside Trevor Richards for Rowdy Tellez. So all three of those guys kind of really performed well after that trade for all of their respective teams. Francis pitched for the Bisons. He's on the 40-man roster. He's the type of guy who, if they have a couple pitching injuries, if they need innings early in the season and he has a strong spring training, I could very easily see him crack an expanded roster. And it's kind of those 26th, 27th, 28th man like roster fights that I'm kind of interested for. Because the thing with really good teams like this Jays team is a lot of positions are already decided. There's not a whole lot of roster battles. We know the shortstop. We know the first baseman. We know the five outfielders who are probably going to be fighting for jobs. The catching situation is a little interesting. Gabriel Moreno is obviously a guy who will be interesting to watch for the first time. But yeah, I'm kind of interested in those back of the bullpen. How does David Phelps look? How does a guy like Francis look? And does someone, a young starter like that, kind of step up and make the team?
Mm-hmm. And at the beginning of the podcast, we talked about how this season may, you know, just like 2020 in the sense that it's a shortened spring training and there's a little bit more uncertainty. Depth, especially at the back end of the rotation, will be pretty critical. But yeah, like you said, the bullpen battles, you know, those extra arms, the 27, the 28th guys. I think another guy who has been a bit lost in the shuffle since he signed before the lockout, of course, is Yimi Garcia. Yeah. Now, he's not exactly a guy that's going to be fighting for a roster spot. I would assume that his spot has already, you know, been given to him. But he's another intriguing guy in Toronto's bullpen in that, you know, he's been really good. He's been, you know, not so good as well. But someone I think that fits like that perfect middle and a guy that, you know, if injuries happen, he could end up being, you know, your seventh guy, your eighth guy, or eighth inning guy rather, you know, alongside guys like Simber and Richards. I think he's someone that I'm interested in. He's intriguing. I'd like to keep a close eye on him, especially since we haven't seen him play. So that'd be a guy I'd be interested in. And then another one is someone who just recently signed with Toronto, and that's Andrew Vasquez, right? He's a big, tall lefty that has really, I think he's only thrown 6 2/3 major league innings. Toronto felt inclined to give him a major league contract. Of course, he has one option remaining. But you look at his major league stats and you're like, oh, this, he had an infinity ERA in 2019. And you're like, heads, you know, scratching your head a little bit. And then you look at his minor league stats and holy smokes, in 6 years, he had a 13.6 strikeouts per nine innings, which is like ridiculously high. He had a little bit of trouble with walks, 4.5 walks per nine. But, you know, he's another lefty. Because I think for the most part of last year, it was Meza was the standard lefty there. And, you know, they had Baruchy at the start of the season and they had Taylor Sesedo. That's who I was thinking of. They had him there as well. But there's certainly a spot for another left-handed pitcher, especially if rosters are expanded. So he's a guy that, you know, he throws mostly curveballs. He's quirky, but he's a big body. And he's someone that will have to earn a significant role in this Blue Jays bullpen. So he's another guy I'd keep an eye out for.
Yeah, I like those are two guys I'm also very interested in seeing. If I was a betting man and someone gave me an over under 4.5 season saves for Yimi Garcia right now, I'd be taking the over. I think he is kind of, if Romano misses a couple weeks, he's the guy you go to. I think you play matchups with Meza, but I think there's a very real chance he's seeing a lot of ninth inning work because he's done it before. And I think Charlie is the type of manager who kind of values the experience in that role. And so I think he'd be next up in line, but those are some of the names we'll be reporting on next week. We'll hopefully be churning out content. So you can take a look at si.com/BlueJays for all of that stuff. si.com/MLB/BlueJays or insidethebluejays.com. Sorry. But yeah, we are going to be reporting on all of those camp battles, everything we can find. We'll be letting you know who's in the best shape of their life as soon as we get down there. I know I will not be someone who gets that tag put on them because we will.
Oh, don't sell yourself short.
I got 5 days to get in the best shape of my life. I'll be hitting the gym right after this, but I don't know if I'm going to make it in time. But yeah, it was great to talk about baseball when it's actually happening. We've been talking about baseball all winter, but now it's officially back.
We're so close to just having the content and the storylines just flow like water. We've been talking about negotiations and minutia and prospects. We've done a lot, which is a lot of fun, but at the end of the day, we like the main characters, right? We like the main characters in the drama. So super, super excited to be back talking about baseball. And hopefully our podcast will become a regular part of the season. And next time, like I said before, you guys hear us, we will be chatting from Dunedin, Florida, the spring training home of your Toronto Blue Jays.